I'm Lisa, recovering alcoholic, drug addict, people-pleasing, codependent, egomaniac with an inferiority complex. Oh, thank you, Jessica. I love you. Boy, I just really, you know, it's quite a different thing to have with your back facing you than it is to stand right here and see all of you. You're beautiful, but you are an amazing sight to behold. Thank you. Okay. Those of you that prayed, now would be a good time. Oh, I'm just so nervous. And I'm mad, do you see me? Yes. And I didn't plan that. How about that? All right. I too received the letter that I hear every Friday night. When women come up Friday night too, I start to say to testify. Oh my God! What is happening to me? All right. So, when other women come up to speak, they always say, I got this letter, and it said that I was supposed to talk about learning to rely on women, and that whatever I said usually is the tone for the whole workshop. You know, they always come up and say that, and every time I go, oh, it's a God thing. Well, I'm here to tell you. It's a quite different thing if you actually get the letter. So I'm going to attempt. Yes, thank God there's water. To tell you how it has been, my story as it relates to learning to rely on women, which is a miracle in and of itself. But I was raised in a very small town, and we had about 800 people, and the town was called Odin, Illinois. And it like set in this valley, and on both sides of the town where you left at, there were these overpasses. Those will come in later. They're overpasses. But anyway, I was the firstborn, and I was the first grandchild on my mother's side. My family was just as dysfunctional as everybody else's family. I was raised in a very religious environment, and where all the women were kind of, they were like right next to God. That's the way I interpreted it anyway. you know, and I don't mean that in a positive way. I mean it in a very scary way. But they were. And my mother's gorgeous. And she's extremely feminine and very giving, very caring, and she's very passionate about her religion. and my mother's mother is also about equal to that. But anyway, the way that, you know, nothing really huge happened or anything. I had some really happy times as a child, and I had some not so happy times as a child. We went to church a whole lot, just a whole lot. like all week long we went, you know, we like had, you know, they were sort of this Methodist, Pentecostal, Baptist sort of with a little bit of some Catholic sort of thing. Maybe just slid in, but not much. But so really, my childhood, especially my early childhood, up until about the age of probably 14, that's all we did. We went to church, we went to funerals, we went to potlucks, and that was the main thing. thing that we did. And everyone loved my mother. Everyone just loved her. And I'm trying to say that, I guess, to you know, I've prayed about this. I guess I'm just, okay. So, anyway, my mother was a very strong figure in my family. And she was not necessarily strong in the way that she was really loud or even that she, like, you know, threw a weight around or anything like that. She was very strong and a very silent in a silent martyr sort of a way. And everybody just knew. You just knew. I think I came out of the birth canal just knowing that there were certain things that you could say around Mom, and there were certain things that you couldn't. And you didn't not say them because you were afraid that you'd get in trouble. You did not say them because you were afraid you might die. I mean, it was that, you know, it was that tremendous. And it was kind of the same thing for all the women in the family. My mother, her sister, my grandma, you know, all the women were, that was just kind of the way it was. And and also, the other way that it sort of was that my mom sort of made the rules up, I thought. That's the way that was my perception. And I thought that all the women were very religious in the same sort of a way. And they all were very strong in the same sort of a way. And they and I knew that I was not exactly like them from a very early age. And that scared me. it scared me for two reasons. It scared me, one, because I thought that, you know, something really bad was going to happen to me. And I was afraid that, you know, that God wouldn't like me if I wasn't more like the other women in my family. And it scared me in another sort of a way because I thought, oh, you know, do you just, like, get a certain age and then you just, like, become your mother? And I felt that way. Yeah. I felt that way because my mother and her mother and my mom's sister, they all look so much alike they could just be sisters. I mean, they just look alike. Their hair is that same sort of hair. That same sort of hair that none of you seem to have, thank God. Yeah, that's good. But I thought that once you got to be a certain age, you know, your hair just kind of did that. And, I mean, I am not kidding you at all. And so I was not happy about that. And I prayed very early on that God would not let me have that hair. And it wasn't that it was bad hair. It looks great on them. But I just didn't want it for myself. But that was, you know, kind of the way that it was. And I really was afraid of that. And the other thing was that, you know, when if anything happened that was a little bit not right down the middle of the, well, not either, you know, the down, right down the middle of the road, you know, I mean, it had to be, and if it was just outside of that, then usually it was kind of kept from the women in the family. And I was watching that, and I realized that I didn't want to be a woman. And, you know, I've had all kinds of different ideas of why it was that I didn't want to be a woman, but the truth, I think, for me today, is that I saw the men in my family. They never really cared too much about the way that the women would talk about this religion thing. And they kind of just did their own thing, and for whatever reason, the women always stayed with them, which, you know, which that was good, it was my dad. And they never got yelled at. And for, you know, for whatever reason, they were still walking, and they seemed to be pretty happy. And I think that I thought that I didn't want to be a woman because I knew that I wasn't like them. And so for some reason, for many reasons, I thought that God wouldn't approve of me not being like them. So it would be better if I was just a guy, because that would be, I could be like them. And so I really did not want to be a girl for a very, 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 very long time. And I just would try to do almost anything I could, including pray into God, you know. I did do that because I thought perhaps if God is God, he could change me on my birthday, perhaps. And I did pray for that when I was about six, and I was absolutely mortified when I woke up and I was six and I saw my long curly hair, and I knew absolutely that I was still a girl. And that really, I got mad at God at that point. And then I tried to bargain with God, and I tried to do a lot of things with God to help me not have to be what it was that I was so afraid of. So I guess, like I said, the women in my family, they were just, you know, there were just certain things that you could, that I could depend on them to do. And usually that was to cry. That was to say something that hurt my feelings. You know, when I was a small child, now, you know, follow me here. And that was to make the rules, but not necessarily have to abide by them all. And they had, like, this direct channel with God, is that's what I thought anyway. And so I didn't depend on women a whole lot, except for just a few of those little things. And of course, because we lived in such a small town, I really thought that all women, I thought everyone's home was like my home. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I thought everybody's mom and dad was like my mom and dad. And those who weren't, they were not good. They were bad. And so I thought outside, you know, and I also thought that those overpasses that were on both sides of the town, well, there's, you know, when you're a little kid, there's no way that I thought I could walk over one, you know. And of course, I was a little kid and I didn't think I'd ever be able to drive. So I really thought there was no getting out. I thought that was the only place in the world that existed, unless I would go with my mom or go with my dad somewhere. And I never knew how we actually got to where we went. And so I always felt like that there was no escape from that place. I guess, you know, I got along with other kids in school just fine. I people liked me, and I was fairly popular, and I was really good at sports. So, you know, when you're really good at sports, that does make people like you too. And but I still knew every day that somehow, somewhere, I got mixed up because I wasn't supposed to be where I was at, but I looked a whole lot like them too. And every day I would just, it was very, I made a conscious choice to pretend and sort of make my own world. And I learned really early on how to do that. And that served me well for a very long time. And it helped me survive, is what it did. I guess when I was about 12 or so, I discovered pills from one of my grandmother on my dad's side. You know. They were little yellow pills with a V on them. And I didn't know very many words at the time for V, but victory was the one that I chose to get a little bit religious about. So I tried that. I knew that my grandmother took them whenever she was feeling a bit nervous, and she always calmed down, and she seemed really, really happy, and things were very, very funny after she would take them. And so I started to kind of steal a little bit of those, and that's kind of the beginning of where my drug use happened. It was shortly after that that I tried all kinds of different drugs. And then I also had my first drink not long after that. And I knew, especially with my first drug, but definitely with my first drink, I really loved the way it smelled, and I just, you know, that wonderful little tingly feeling, and then, you know, and then you just leave that little feeling. But I loved that, and I loved, and it helped me make my own, helped me build these worlds a little bit, with more color, I should say. And so my drinking and drug use began about that time. Also about that time, a couple years before that, my grandpa died, and that was my my mom's dad, and he was a real special friend to me. He was one of the only people who, for whatever reason, I really felt like that he liked me just the way I was. I loved doing everything with him. Being with him was very safe. And but he died when I guess I was about 10, and so that just furthered my belief that God was mad at me, you know, because it was all about me even then. But I was just certain that it was because I hadn't done things right. You know, I wasn't doing exactly the things that I should be doing, and I wasn't as I even felt bad that I wasn't wanting to be a girl still, and I thought that was, you know, I thought God would probably be even mad about that. So it certainly furthered my belief that God didn't like me. And alcohol and drugs, although I knew that they were wrong, I mean, they raised me telling me these things were wrong. You know, they weren't just bad, they were wrong. Although I knew they were wrong, I figured there were so many other things that I was doing that was wrong that, you know, this at least helped me forget about those other things I was doing that were so wrong. And so I could only focus on the one thing. So it was much better than 15, you know. So I decided to go ahead and continue to do that. I really didn't have real close relationships with girls when I was in school. You know, like I said, I liked most everybody, and most everybody liked me pretty good, but I mostly hung out with the guys, I guess. I played a lot of basketball and football, and, you know, I hung out with the girls, but I didn't really have a close relationship with another girl. I didn't have, like, a little, you know, I didn't have, like, a little, a best friend. And so while I was in high school, I drank and used all through high school, and very rarely ever got in trouble. I had just a vast amount of enablers. But through high school, I really didn't have any friendships with other girls my age. I did have, I guess they were sort of friendships that I had with teachers who were women. There were a couple. My fourth grade teacher, and then I had two other teachers and my fourth grade teacher, she still writes me today. Thank you for that. but I had these three teachers. We would do things outside of school. Mostly it was drink or get high or something. I thought they were my really good friends, but, you know, who knows. I didn't do a lot of talking with them either. It was mostly, you know, they were certainly old enough to buy alcohol, so I just drank with them. You know, and there were. I should mention that when I was in junior high, I think that was junior high. I was sexually abused a couple times in my life. A couple times. And in my life, those few times, it was both a male and a female. Okay? So you know that. All right, that was. I gotta tell you. Boy, this is a whole lot better if you just get it on out of there, because it is not near scary out here. Oh my God. Okay. So anyway, I thought those experiences had happened, which furthered my hate for just almost anyone, but mostly of me, because I was convinced that that this had happened because I did something, you know. I was bad. And I, you know, rationalized it a million different kinds of ways and how it became my fault. And so I continued to bargain with God in a lot of different ways. And I continued also to believe that if I had been a boy, I probably could have prevented both of those things. For whatever reason, I thought that, but I did. So I had a lot of stuff going on inside of me, for sure. And I drank a whole lot, and I used a whole lot, and I hated being a girl, and I hated being me. And I did all kinds of things to prove to you how much I hated being a girl and how much I hated being me. I hurt myself in just a tremendous amount of ways. And doing that, I even helped me to survive. But I did do that. And I started that real early too. I started that before I drank and before I used. So, I guess, you know, that would put me at a, you know, I went through high school and on into college, and, you know, I met some other girls in college, and I played sports, and my popularity was not nearly as big in college as it was in high school and grade school because, well, my high school and grade school was in the same building, so, you know. I also found out that there were places to go on the other side of the overpass. But I went to college in like just 15 minutes from my house. It was a little bitty. It was probably not even as big as some of your high schools. But I went to college and I did meet some other girls, but still there was no real friendship happening. And I still knew how completely different that I was. And I still didn't like me, and I didn't like being a girl, and I didn't like my mom, and I just didn't like a whole lot of things. After college, my life just kind of spinned that way as far as the things went with in relationships with other people. No matter who they were. When I moved to, and my drinking and drugging continued, and it got just kept getting more and more and bigger and bigger and bigger. When I moved to Georgia, and I worked in Atlanta, like that was a huge thing for me because I just couldn't. I mean, I was from a town of 800 people, and you know, you really didn't think Atlanta was there. You just thought it was a picture on this map thing. You know, you didn't really know it was somewhere. And I loved Atlanta, and I loved all the different kinds of people that were here. And but I still didn't like being me. I tried just a lot of things to try to, you know, I bargained one time with God, and I said, you know, okay, apparently it's because I don't dress like a girl. So, okay, I'll dress like a girl, and then if you'll just, you know, like fix me after that, then I'll do it for a little bit. And so I attempted to do that, and it was very painful. And I got this job at a doctor's office, and of course, you know, that was certainly where I could get a lot of drugs, but I was working in this doctor's office, and I was just sure that they would want me to look like a woman, you know. So I bought like hair things, and I got like I got the makeup. I called my mother and I asked her what kind it was that she put up, that she would apply upon me whenever she would want me to wear it. And she was so excited. Oh, I can't even. She sent me some right away. But, but I got all those things, and I tried to buy, you know, I bought girls' shoes and just all, the whole deal. And, you know, there I remember walking in that first day when I was wearing it. And I was trying so hard to build a different world, you know, and I was not working. But I could barely walk, and I had practiced, and I thought, you know, I could do this for just, you know, 8 hours of my day. I can take all my clothes off in the car when I get there. And what ended up happening, thank God, and see, this is a God thing, because what ended up happening was that in less than a week, the people who I worked for, there were probably, maybe there were 40 people, 40, 50 women, well, women and men that worked there, and in less than a week, they all came to me. And they set me down, and they told me that I could stop this foolish charade, that, you know, this was not me. What I was doing was not me, and it wasn't who they hired. You know, it was just simply not me. And they said, you know, we like you. We like you just exactly the way you are. Now, I was, you know, I was blazed at the time, but I do remember that. And but they did say that. And they may have been the first people to say that to me. And I said, we like you just exactly the way you are. You know. Thank you. And they said, please don't ever come back in here like this. And so I didn't. And I almost never again did I attempt that. But for a while, I didn't attempt it. But so I was like, I had this new feeling I was having was just, it was amazing. I couldn't believe that these people liked me. And then I became convinced that they didn't actually like me exactly the way I was, that they liked me not like a girl. That's the way I interpreted that. So I began to make myself more like that. As much as I could. And of course they didn't, no one came in and set me down or anything, you know, but but that was where I was, that was what I was hearing. So I continued to, you know, I worked in the medical field for up until I went in the hospital and got sober. I didn't have real meaningful relationships up at that point. I sort of was just really, I was like as nice as I could possibly be to everyone I saw. Because I just figured that everyone, you know, it was important for everyone to like me. And I, you know, maybe that was because I thought everybody did that lived in Odin. But but that was one thing that I really was doing a lot of is just, you know, I would just say anything to you to make you like me. I'd do anything you wanted me to do. I'd almost go anywhere you'd want me to go. If you got me high enough, I'd go anywhere you wanted me to go. So, you know, I continued like that. And no meaningful relationships. However, I felt responsible to all the people that I was being nice to. I was just sure that, you know, no matter who you were, if you called me for whatever, I just needed to do it because that's what I was supposed to do. And so I, like, had... I had a whole lot of husbands and wives. You know, that's what it was like, really. It truly was. You know, there was only one thing I wasn't doing, and I wasn't going to do that. So, you know. But, and then in August of 95, after a horrendous trip home to see my parents in Illinois, I decided that I just could not take anymore. I just couldn't. one of the trip home to see my parents, or to see my family was extremely upsetting, because I was trying to be more of what I thought was me, and that was just simply not accepted. And that really, really messed me up. And, you know, I had tried a lot of different things, and I thought that I could explain that, and you really can't. So on the way home, I like to never made it back to Atlanta. I don't know how I made it back to Atlanta. But when I did, and I woke up the next day, I decided that I couldn't take it anymore. So I had been actually to two AA meetings in Atlanta, and that was that was downtown Atlanta, and really the only reason why I went was because they did tell me at work, they didn't fire me, but they did tell me that I needed to go to AA meetings, and you know, if I didn't do that, then they might have to get rid of me or something. So I went to the, you know, how dare them. I went to the AA meetings. I got the whole sort of a thing. I saw there were chips. You know, I went to two. I realized it's what you do. You know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You know, no way in hell was I going to do that. But I was on the marijuana maintenance program, and you know, all the other pills, because they were my medication, and all those things that we do, or that I did. And then I would I broke into the clubhouse. On 30 days, and then on 60 days, and then, you know, the whole deal. Thank God it's not like Serenity House. You give you a chip every month, you know. But I broke in there, and I stole those chips, you know, when it was time. I didn't go in and steal them all at the same time. I stole it when it was time. Somehow that made it okay. So that was my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous. None. I had none. It's like I was never even there. But went into inpatient, and was in treatment, and I did that for a 6 month thing, and that, you know, it was the beginning for sure of learning about what it was even, you know, what was about what it was even like to be in a, you know, begin to even possibly think about being in a relationship with myself, possibly. For the next couple years, maybe three, couple years for sure, in AA, I did, you know, I actually, that was my final Y chip. I haven't picked up one since that day in the hospital. But I went to meetings, and there were things in my life that were changing, and mostly those were that I wasn't taking, you know, I didn't have this brown paper bag full of pills anymore, and that I didn't drink anymore. But the thing that was not changing was that I still hated me. I still hated the fact that I was a woman, and I didn't much care for you either. I attempted in many ways to get, you know, I figured if people certainly they'll throw you out of AA if you do something bad enough. No. So I did attempt to try to do that, and that didn't work. The women at my home group, which is still my home group today, just shook their head and said they loved me and just keep coming back. And every day I was just more and more amazed that they kept doing that, but and I still kind of tried to tell most everybody I could possibly think of how I thought, things I thought I should say, things I thought you wanted me to say. And, you know, I'm having a really hard time realizing that that is called manipulating. Yeah. And on the way up here, I was thinking, oh, my God, I was manipulating women. Oh, my God. You know, apparently it doesn't seem that bad to you, but it seems real bad to me. But I continued to do that in sobriety. And I still, you know, now I didn't not only have husbands and wives from Atlanta, I had husbands and wives in Buford and Cumming and, you know, Doraville and Atlanta. And it was very tiring. Sober. because you couldn't, you know, I couldn't keep things straight, and it was just really, really hard. And the more, you know, and I did that. I understand now. You know, that was all I knew to do. And I was just so afraid. I was so afraid of everything. You know, that is really, that's really the proverbial ticket, is that I was always so afraid. And finally, you know, I had several sponsors, not several, you know, eight maybe. I guess that's several. You know, just for a little bits of time. But I would have a sponsor, and things just never, it didn't work out, and things didn't work out, and they were, and I started picking sponsors who were like my mother, who, you know, reminded me of my mother, and I didn't know it until, like, I was, you know, just me and her, and so I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I kept doing that, and I would pick sponsors who were like my aunt, and sponsors who were like my grandma, and such, you know, and then I would pick sponsors who were close to being like that of my abuser. You know, that was probably the most terrifying to me. And then, when I finally was to the point that I was willing to do anything, and I, that was a couple years into it, and I didn't want to live, but I couldn't really kill myself, you know, because I was so afraid of what was going to happen if I did. And finally, I was pretty much tricked into coming to this workshop. And it was after that, I think it was the workshop after that actually, that I started listening. I was really starting to pay attention to what other women were saying. I was really starting to pay attention to try to see if there was something that I wanted to have, you know, something that I could see value in you. And finally, I did find someone that I just thought, you know, now I really liked the things that she said, and I really liked, I liked that she seemed very confident, and that, you know, she seemed to really kind of not, she wasn't really scared of me, at least I didn't think she was, but she always smiled at me, and I walked around with the mean face, you know, I mean the really mean face, for a long time, because, you know, I just was too afraid for you to approach me, and I figured if I had the really, really, really mean face, then you wouldn't dare, who would dare come up to me if I had the really mean face? Well, she didn't actually say anything, but she smiled, and I thought, she's got guts, because I knew, you know, I've been practicing that mean face in the mirror for quite some time, I'll have you know. But she smiled at me, and so I finally risked one time, and it was at a workshop, I believe, and it was at night, so it was dark, so she couldn't see my face, because that was really important. I didn't want her to see my face. And so she didn't have to, I couldn't tell if she was looking at me or anything, and so I risked something, and I don't know what I did. I told her something, asked her a question, and she answered me, and it didn't hurt. And that was like so cool. You know, it was just like so intense. I couldn't believe it. So I told her something else. And I was waiting, and she said something, and it didn't hurt. And I thought, oh my God, it didn't hurt. And that was really like how our relationship continued that way. I'd say something, she'd say something back, it wouldn't hurt, I'd be, you know, amazed. And all of a sudden, I started realizing, really now is when I'm realizing it, I don't know if I'd realized it then, but I started calling her, you know, on a regular basis. And then I was calling her when I needed to talk to, you know, when I needed someone. And she was always there, always. And she never said anything to me that hurt me, ever. She never did anything to me that hurt me. She never even pretended, you know, it didn't hurt at all. And she made it very safe for me to take huge risks, to because I needed to, because I, you know, I had, there had been a couple years without a drink now, or a drug, and I needed to risk big, because if I didn't, I was going to use again, and I was going to drink again, and I might blow my head off, maybe. And she made it so safe for me, and I risked, you know, so huge. And, you know, that was the beginning of really beginning to rely on women, was relying on that one person. Because I could, I had to start small. You know, there was no other way to do it. And after her, after I continued to risk these things, she would begin to introduce me to other people. And I just kind of, what I did, is, you know, and this is just what I did, but it was real important that people be safe. Because I had risked, I had huge things I needed to talk about, and, you know, for it just needed to be safe for me. And so I kind of followed her lead. You know, she'd introduce me to somebody, I'd wait around to see if she was going to talk to him very long, see if she really liked him, see what, you know, really, what really went on, and then I knew, you know, it was okay to go ahead and I'll risk something with her. You know, and that was the way that I learned how to rely on women. And you know, this person today is, you know, she is, she's the very, I have my very best friend now that I didn't have way back then. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So, you know, I have that today. And still today, you know, when everything else is crazy, she's still safe. And that's good. But that was really, you know, that was how I started to rely on women. And I had to begin to, you know, and every, and, you know, the amazing thing is that for me, as I continued to stay sober and I continued to work the steps and I continued to be willing to change, or at least definitely open, as I continued to do that, you know, new things would come about that would be, you know, it would just like, you know, my story today is, I mean, I could never have got up here and talked about an actual event, you know, really learning to rely on women a couple years ago. I couldn't have done that because I would not have, I couldn't have gotten it. But I got it now. And, you know, what began to happen is as I began to reach out to more and more women, and I began to go ahead and learn what it was like to be able to make it safe for myself to reach out. You know, now I didn't have her with me all the time. You know, that was a really hard one, but, and I'm still doing that. But I am beginning to see that, you know, I had such a horrible time with being a woman, and it was because I was just so afraid, you know, of what that, of the definition that I had in my mind of what that was. And I didn't think that, you know, I didn't think that, that I could set my own boundaries. I didn't think that I could keep myself safe, you know, and now what I'm finding is that I can keep myself safe, and that I can set my own boundaries, and that that really doesn't have anything to do with me being a woman. It's me being human. And, you know, I can say that I, you know, I accept that I'm a woman today. And, you know, that may not be like a, you know, that may not come as a shock to you. Maybe it will. I don't know. But, you know, but it's a huge thing for me. It's a very huge thing. Because I am finally all right with being a woman. In fact, I'm so all right with being a woman. If I had my choice today, I would choose to be a woman. That's so huge. I mean, that's like, that's the hugest miracle. It's such a huge miracle. And, but, you know, I think I started off telling some sort of strange story, and then I ended up, you know, here. And, you just can't get here from where I was, you know. You know, people say that, and that's just completely true for me. You know, I would never have even, I mean, I have the things today, all the things that I never even knew that I wanted. You know, and thank God I didn't say, look, don't ever give me this. You know, because, oh, my God, I would be, you know, I'd be missing this mint green shirt, I'll tell you. So, And that right there is worth it all. But risk sometime this weekend, because it is safe here. But risk, just a small one. I challenge you to do that, because you will be shocked and amazed that if you just keep going, if we just keep taking the next right step, I'm continuously shocked and amazed at the things that begin to unfold and happen in my life, and that I can see unfold and happen in yours. So thank you for helping me choose to live. I love you.